Greetings, humans. You have entered the sideboard.
Wait, the sideboard? What the heck? Do commander decks even have sideboards?
What happened to the command zone? Guys? Guys?
Yeah, what the hell, Jimmy?
Yeah, what? What's happening?
What is going on here?
We've started a new podcast, kind of, not really.
So, we warned you on last episode of the Command Zone that we are going to be doing Thursday episodes that are slightly different than our normal content. We're calling them the Sideboard episodes.
What a great name. You emailed me this earlier today, and I saw it, and it's one of those things where it's like, you see it, and you're like, yep, it's like it was under my nose the whole time. This is a perfect name.
We need catchy names for things. That's just how...
Yeah, the end step, sideboard.
So these are going to be about whatever the heck we want to talk about.
Yeah, it's the sideboard. We can dig into the sideboard after our main topic, our first game, whatever, and figure out what we want to dig out of there. I think the episode that we did with the professor last week is similar to this. You know, when we cover sort of ongoing events, things that have happened in the community. This is the perfect sort of, I was going to say trash can, but like the,
the canvas,
yeah, outside of our main work of art. Oh God, I just called the commands on the work of art. It's all over.
This analogy is going crazy. I love it. It's awesome.
It's, you know, where you toss all the other stuff that you can't talk about normally.
Yep. We're going to be able to talk about, for instance, Battle for Zendikar Draft is what we're going to talk about this episode, but who knows? We could talk about any format we feel like, anything that's going on in the world of Magic. We could talk about a totally different game if we feel like it. This is just going to be the place where Jimmy and I get to discuss anything that makes us feel passionate and excited.
Yeah, and Draft is definitely our second favorite format, or sometimes even favorite format, depending on the set. Cons of Tarkir, I think, definitely places itself high up there.
Yeah, definitely for a couple weeks there, I was liking it more than Commander.
Yeah, my friend Daniel Kim described Draft to me in a great way, which is, it's a great way to play Magic because you get to encapsulate the three most fun parts of playing Magic the Gathering, which is 1, opening boosters, 2, building a deck, and then 3... playing the game of Magic.
Yep.
So you get to do all these three different things. And speaking of the number 3, I guess we should explain what Draft is really quickly.
Yeah, okay. So if you're not familiar with Draft because you listen to the Command Zone but you don't draft, it's what we call a limited format, which means you don't start with any specific cards. In the draft format, you start with 3 packs of cards.
Yeah, boost packs.
Yep. And so what happens is you open your pack of cards, you look at it, and you choose a single card from the pack. You're playing at a table with 6 to 8 other people.
Well, 6 to 7 other people with 8 total usually is the number for a draft pod.
Yeah, it's usually an even number.
Yeah.
You take the 1 card out of your pack, you hand it to your left or your right, depending on what round it is. You hand it to the side, and you take the pack from the person to your right. So now you have a pack that they've already taken 1 card out of, and you've already taken 1 card out of the previous pack.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look through what remains, you take 1 card, you pass it, and you keep doing that for all 3 packs until you've built a deck that's 40 cards.
Yep.
And then you play it against everybody else.
You can add any number of lands you want. Usually there's about 17 lands and 23 cards. So
basic lands.
It's not only limited in the fact that you're opening sealed booster packs, but it's also limited in that you don't really have access to that many cards. It's great. Some people describe it as sort of like the put together every tool in your garage that you can to fight a war with. You know,
it's the MacGyver format for sure. Most people will say that it's the most skill intensive format because you're also evaluating cards on the fly. According to what other cards you already have and what other cards may come in the future.
Yeah,
it's super, super fun. We love it. We do it a lot. I'm going to assume that most of you know what Draft is. At some point, maybe we'll have to do a video or something explaining Draft more in depth for people who haven't tried it.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You have not tried it, we're going to talk about it, a lot of things on this episode, and we may go a little deep and it may sound a little intimidating, but Draft is actually super, super fun. You can do it with your friends. I would encourage you to try it out. Don't be too worried about winning the draft the first few times you do it.
Yeah.
Just go try it because it'll get you used to just draft as a format.
And a quick shout out to, of course, Marshall Sutcliffe, who is the host of the Limited Resources podcast. Right now, he's hosting it along Louis Scott Vargas. This is the podcast that I started listening to that inspired both me and Josh to create the Command Zone.
Sure. And they are the gold standard of all Magic podcasts, and specifically Limited and Draft podcasts.
Yeah. Love Draft. Big fan of it. And today we're going to be talking about Battle for Zendikar, which is the most recent set that came out. You guys will know it because that's Expeditions. That's what everyone talks about.
Yeah, I'm sure you all know what Battle for Zendikar is. Now, this format has... There's been a lot of chatter, Jimmy.
Yeah, there actually has been a lot.
A lot of people are having a tough time.
Yep, I'm having a tough time, and I hate blaming it on things that aren't myself.
That aren't like yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
but
I'm having a tough time.
it's a difficult format. It's very complex.
Maybe it's because I'm only playing 8-4s.
Yeah, 8-4s will make it tougher for sure. That the average skill level of everybody else that you're drafting this will have a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and the stakes are higher.
It's a tough format. And so this is one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it, is because there has been a lot of talk out there and a lot of stuff on Twitter. Just, it's not like Magic Origins. It's just not necessarily clicking with everybody. Mm-hmm. I've actually done really well with the format. I think I'm like 18-3 in matches or something right now.
Nice. In real life, I've done great. In online, I've done horribly.
Well, I'd say in general, too, the players on MTGO are...
of a higher skill level, for sure.
Than what you're going to sit down in an
FNM. We're talking about Magic Online when we say MTGO, by the way.
I did really bad at Sealed, though.
Yeah, and I actually was saying this from the pre-release. I think this is one of those sets where Sealed is not going to be as good or rewarding, and is a lot more variance-based.
Yeah, I do think it's tougher. I do think, knowing what I know now, because I was bad at Sealed, and I did a couple Sealed online, and I went 2-2, and it was not very good. And that caused me to like go out there and really look around and try and figure out, you know, what I was doing wrong. And so actually sort of not being very good at the Sealed format probably caused me to study it more. And in which case, that's probably a reason why I'm doing a little better at draft.
Yeah.
So why do you think people are having trouble with this set in particular?
It's weird. So normally when you draft a set, there are a lot of not hard set rules, but just basic guidelines. Like, for instance, is it an efficient, like how to judge a card, for example.
Yes.
So it's 4 mana and it's a 4/4. On the vanilla scale, it means if you're just looking at how much it costs and the power and toughness, how good is the creature, a 4 mana 4/4 is very acceptable, and it's pretty good, you know, for being 4 mana. Sometimes you get 4 mana 2/3s or whatever, and you're like, right. Oh, gross. It's way different than Commander, obviously, too, because, you know, a 4 mana 4/4 that does nothing in Commander is just awful. But in Limited, it depends on the set that it's in. There's a lot of evaluation of cards, and a lot of those rules that are pretty typical in other sets are kind of thrown out the window with Battle for Zendikar, because it's so synergy-based. And certain cards may be both equally good but in completely different decks, and if you're drafting a certain deck and you want to take the other card, it could just be the flat-out wrong decision, even if it's a higher power level in the other deck.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that in most sets, you look at a card and you look at its overall power level in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, Magic Origins is a great example of this. In Magic Origins, you can usually look at a card and you can almost, not 100%, but in a lot of ways, you don't even have to think about what other cards are in the set, what other cards you already have. You just can look at that card and say, this card is objectively powerful by itself.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that. In this set, there's a lot less of that.
Yeah, it's scary.
There's tons of synergy.
It makes every single time you pick a card an unsure moment in the first pack or so. That's what I've been feeling, is just this sort of creeping anxiety of like, oh my gosh, am I in the right lane? Am I getting fed the right cards? Or am I just trying to jump into something? Am I trying to force something? Oh gosh, and sort of panicking.
Yeah, isn't this going to work out? Is it going to work out? Oh my gosh, it's not working out.
And then in the second pack, you see cards going by. I'm like, oh, I made the wrong choice. I flubbed. I'm done.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that sort of anxiety going on with this draft, because I think, at the same time, there are also other people around the table trying to figure it out as it's going, and that can send mixed signals. And when we talk about signals in draft, it means, like, for instance, if you take a black card in your first pack, and from every single pack for that rest of that first pack, you see no black cards, your opponent to your right is sending you a signal that he or she or the person next to them is going to be in black, so that you shouldn't just force all the black cards you can get because you got a really sweet black rare or whatever. And the signals in this are a lot more mixed because there are so many different cards that are good for different archetypes, and sometimes people may not have fully picked up on what's good, and they may be passing a card that is objectively better, and they may be in that archetype because they've just made the wrong choice, and then you're all of a sudden your signals are all thrown off. And
well, I think also because in most sets, like your first example was talking about colors, and what the color signals are, this set has an entirely another axis that you have to think about, which is what archetype signals are. So somebody could be in black to your right, which means they're passing to you, which in general, in most sets, would mean you shouldn't draft black because they're going to be cutting all the black cards. But in this set, if they're in one of the archetypes you're not in, you could probably, like, let's say you're in the black-white life gain deck, and they're in the black-blue ingest deck. There's not a lot of overlap between those two decks, so you could draft black just fine, and they could be right next to you. And so that makes signal reading a lot more weird than normal. And I think that's definitely like one of the pitfalls that people are running into, is that signals are a lot harder to read. And what you were talking about earlier, as far as like being anxious about like not knowing if you're in the right direction and what lane you're supposed to be in, you know, staying open in this format is a lot harder, but also better than a lot of the other formats. Finding that archetype that's open is going to be so much more powerful than finding just a few powerful cards in two colors.
Yeah, and that's sort of the problem I've been running into. I've been drafting the quote-unquote good stuff deck.
Yeah,
where I just look at the card.
Which is not that good in this format.
It's not that good. You look at a card and you're like, that's straight removal at instant speed. I'm going to take it. And like, that's an efficient creature that does stuff, and I have a couple of small things that may synergize with it. I'll take it. And you just kind of end up with a deck that functions, but it doesn't cruise in the way that a fully synergistic deck does. And I can't tell you how many times I've lost to that life gain deck now.
Yeah, the life gain deck is really good, but each individual card in that deck does not look very good.
Yeah, and you would never want half those cards in other decks either.
Right.
Like Kalastra Healer is just an unplayable two drop in so many other decks.
But it's amazing in that deck. It's actually a very, very good card in that deck.
It may as well be an uncommon in that deck.
Well, let's talk about synergy really quick, because what you said, I think I've heard a lot of people say, but nobody's really explained what they mean. So a pile of good cards versus synergy. A lot of people are throwing out that analogy, which I believe is true, but I think that people aren't understanding what the synergy part means. To me, synergy means that you're evaluating cards based upon what you've already picked and what you might possibly pick from here on. That means that your 4-mana 4/4 may or may not fit into what I've already picked and what I'm picking in the future. A 4-mana 4/4, objectively powerful. However, a Kalastra Healer, which is a 2-mana 1/2, sounds horrible. It's an ally, and when it enters the battlefield, it has rally. So anytime it or another ally enters the battlefield, your opponents lose one life and you gain one life. So that doesn't actually sound that good.
Yeah, because it comes in and it does it for itself.
Yep.
But the big thing is that there are other cards in the set that aren't just like, oh, you can gain more life, or it's an ally, it's going to trigger. It's like, no, whenever you gain life, you may. And those cards all...
Yeah, there's a bunch of cards that say, if you gain life, do this. If you gain life, this creature grows. If you gain life, this creature gets flying. If you gain life, blah, blah, blah. And that card turns on a bunch of those cards. So I guarantee you, if you've drafted in a certain way, there's times when you're 4-mana 4/4, you won't pick it. You'll pick the 2-mana 1/2.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's really hard.
And they could both be in the same color.
Yep.
They could both work in your deck. One is just going to be the absolute correct pick.
Yep. And that's hard to see. So that's what synergy is. Synergy is really, as you're drafting, you're thinking about the cards you've already taken and the cards you may take from here on. So the first step to that, when you think about it, is in order to know what cards you may take from this point forward in the draft, you need to know what the archetypes in the set are.
Yeah, and you need to know which cards are the premium commons and the ones that really make the deck buzz and make it function.
But it really sounds hard, because there's 10, they basically did two color pairings.
Mm-hmm.
Every two color pairing has an archetype. So that's 10 archetypes. That sounds crazy. It sounds like, how am I going to remember that? They're actually all very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them also, we'll go through this later, you don't even have to worry about, because some of the archetypes are not that great. So really, you're going to narrow it down to 5 or 6 that you may possibly play. But let's just go through the archetypes really quickly, just so that you get an idea of what they are.
Yeah, and before we do, we'll talk about a couple of keywords. There are a few words that there are a few new keywords in the set that will directly affect the archetypes. The first is devoid, and it'll say devoid on the card, and it just means that the card is colorless. So it's quote unquote colorless matters. Certain cards are affected by that. There is ingest. Whenever the creature with ingest does combat damage to a player, you exile the top card of their library. And then there are processor cards that can process those cards in exile and do cool effects. Like one of them is a Man of War. It just bounces a creature for processing a card. Let's see what else is there.
There's Converge, which cares about what colors and how many colors you spent when you did it. As we go through, we can explain it.
Yeah.
So one of the archetypes is red blue devoid. That just means red blue colorless. There's red black aggro. So red black, it also has a devoid element, but it's mostly an aggro deck. There's blue black ingest. So it's blue and black, but it cares about exiling your opponent's cards. There's black white life gain. Self-explanatory.
I hate that deck.
There's blue-white flyers/awaken, but it's really blue-white flyers. There's blue-green converge. Again, converge cares about how many colors of mana you have access to. There's green, white, and red allies. So you can do combinations of both. You can do green, white allies, green, red allies.
White, red allies. White, red allies. White, green.
Yeah. Although there's also a green, red color pair that is landfall.
Yep. So whenever a land enters the battlefield under control, something happens. Usually your creatures just get bigger.
Yeah. And then there's green, black, sacrifice.
Yeah.
So now you're listening to all this, and there's no way you're going to remember all 10 archetypes if you don't already know them. A quick way to sort of get an idea of what each archetype wants to do is to just look at the gold cards in the set, especially the uncommon gold cards. So like the red-green uncommon, so the dual color uncommon for red-green is called Grove Rumbler. It's a 3/3 for 4 mana, and when you it has landfall, so whenever you play a land, it gets +2/+2, and it has trample.
So it becomes a 5/5 for 4 mana every time you play a land. It's a very good card.
But what's that tell me?
Yeah.
What's the mechanic on the card? It's red-green. It has landfall. That's the deck. It's a red-green landfall deck. That means...
How does the deck play? Trample. Attack. Yeah.
Well, landfall is a mechanic that's very good on attack and very bad on defense because you can't drop lands on other players' turns naturally. You need some effect that lets you do it. So it's naturally an aggro-oriented strategy because it's a mechanic that works on your turn.
Yep.
Look at the Herald of Kozilek. So that's the blue and red uncommon gold card. It's a 3-drop 2/4, but what it says is your colorless spells cost one less to cast.
Yep, and it's one red blue.
So what's that telling you? It's telling you that blue and red care about colorless.
Yep.
And that's exactly what that archetype is. Well, the last one we'll talk about is the Skyrider Elf. It's a blue, a green, and X for a flying
converge ally.
So what happens is it gets as many +1/+1 counters as you spent colors to cast it. So if you pay green and blue and make X 0, then it's a 2/2 flyer because you spent two colors.
Yep.
But if you spend green, a blue, and then you make X 2, and the two colors you spent for X are red and white, now it's a 4/4 flyer for 4 mana.
Pretty good.
Which is a good card, but also, what's it tell you? What's the text on the card? It's green and blue, and it has Converge. And what is the green and blue archetype? It's the Converge archetype.
Yeah.
So
it's also the archetype that you ride Sweet Manta Rays through the sky.
Yeah. It's actually a good archetype also, but... So you can look at the uncommon cycle of gold cards, and each one of them, whatever they're doing, that's going to tell you what that archetype wants to do. So that's an easy way that the designers have basically given you a blueprint or a roadmap for what the archetypes are.
Now, these gold cards usually are very powerful in the right archetypes. There are times, and there are exceptions, when they signify what the archetype does, but they suck.
Right.
This happens every time.
We're not saying all those cards are good. We're just saying they're signposts.
In this case, all three of these cards, I think, are pretty good.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially for the archetypes.
Okay, so now you've learned the archetypes, and that's going to help you evaluate each card when you're drafting and figure out which deck or decks they belong in. So some cards fit into only one archetype. Some fit into two. Remember, every color has four color pairs with it. Blue can pair with white, red, green, or black. So that's four archetypes that blue fits with. So when you see a blue card, you need to evaluate quickly which other color pair and archetype does this fit with.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the big problem people are running into. It's like, when and how do I know sort of when to lock into my archetype?
Yeah, the idea of pivoting is really scary because it's not a very good feeling to pick a sweet rare that was one color and easy to cast in your first pack and then not being able to play it.
And I'll say a lot of the rares in this set are actually archetype specific cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, here's a scenario that's really easy to envision. So there's a card called Bloodbond Vampire. It's 2/2 black for a 3/3 vampire ally, but whenever you gain life, it gets +1/+1 counter. So that's not actually a very good card unless you can gain life. A 4 mana 3/3.
Especially that's 2 black black, it's even hard to cast.
Yeah. It's a 4 mana 3/3. If you can't gain life, and not just like have one card in your deck that gains life, because what are the chances you draw it? You have to like have a good chance to gain life in a game. But then Bloodbond Vampire becomes very good, because it might become a 7/7 or an 8/8 for 4 mana over the course of the game. So let's say you open a pack and you take Bloodbond Vampire, thinking, oh, I'm going to be in the life gain deck. And then you spend the next couple of picks trying to follow that archetype. But after pick 5 or 6, you're cut out. You just haven't gotten enough cards that fit into it. And now you want to switch over to, well, you've got these black cards, so you're going to try and switch and pair it with blue. Problem is, cards like Bloodbond Vampire, they don't work with blue.
Yep.
Because that's the ingest deck. So now all of a sudden you've got a couple of cards that are basically, you can't play them. They're not good. And so this is how you can get into these positions in a draft where it's like, uh-oh, I wasted my first like six or seven picks in, yeah. And now I can't actually even pivot. Like in Magic Origins, if you did that, you just drop your second color, add in the new color, and you'd be fine because the black cards you were taking worked in either side. But in this one, some of the cards you're going to take, if you're specific to an archetype, will not work in the new deck.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that is definitely something I've run into where it's like, sweet, I got it. And like, oh my God, pick two. I got another card that's really good in this. And it feels like that. But really, it's just that the person in front of you has been taking the more open cards. And the problem is, though, that it's like, you want to take those crossover cards first. But guess what? Everyone that knows what they're doing would be taking those as well.
Well, and here's the thing we'll talk about. There's sort of two categories of cards, I think. And this is the key to staying open and I think drafting a better deck overall most of the time is to understand these two categories. So there's crossover cards and then there's archetype specific cards. So the crossover
cards...
This is
all specific, by the way, guys, to Battle for Zendikar.
Yes, exactly.
This is a very, very different, difficult set to draft.
I think it's similar to Modern Masters.
Yeah. Monster. I said Monster.
Yeah,
Matter.
And Cons had a little bit, although it was three color and there was a lot of complexity from that. But yes, not all sets are like this. Magic Origins is nothing like this. So crossover cards and archetype specific cards are the two categories. Crossover cards are cards where they will cross over into multiple archetypes. And
as in you'll play them in, if you were playing that color, you'll probably play this card because it is just a good card.
It's a good card and it fits into a couple of different things that the different archetypes are wanting to do. So for blue, this would be like Eldrazi Sky Spawner, which is a 2 and a blue for a 2/1 flyer that also brings a 1/1 Eldrazi Scion with it.
Pretty good. And there's Colossal Discovery, which is a 3 and a blue for a draw 2 cards. And you can also cast it for its awaken cost for 5 and a blue and make a land into a 4/4. And also draw 2 cards. Which is
that
pretty sweet.
Is a 3-for-1. It's kind of like Mold Drifter. It's a very good card. You'd put it in almost any deck with blue.
Yep.
Black has like Complete Disregard, which is 2 and a black, and you can exile target creature with power 3 or less. A very, very strong card. It's removal. It's conditional, but it exiles, which a lot of archetypes want to do, and it just kills a small creature.
Yeah, and it's instant speed. And also Black's other big card is Grip of Desolation, which is 4 black-black for an instant to exile a creature and a land. And that's just great. You know, it's just, it makes sense that it fits in any black deck because there's never a time when you're going to be like, oh, I'm the life gain deck. I don't want to exile this creature. It's like, no, you want to get rid of his biggest threat. Like,
and
you...
in this format, a lot of times the lands are also creatures. So sometimes you're just getting rid of two creatures.
Yeah, which
it's
is amazing.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
For white, there's something like Sheer Drop, which is a sorcery that destroys target tapped creature. It also has Awaken.
Mm-hmm.
There's Stasis Snare, which is an enchantment you can cast at flash speed. It's basically Oblivion Ring.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
And
again,
like Gideon's Reproach, too.
Yeah,
like
Gideon's Reproach is a very good one, a common also. Go ahead, red.
Red is Touch of the Void, 2 and a red for a Devoid. By the way, look how much I've drafted this set. Every single one of these cards, I know the exact text to. It's 2 and a red for a sorcery speed that does a sorcery speed burn spell that does 3 damage to either a creature or player.
And it exiles.
And it exiles a creature if it's killed this way.
I would say outnumber if it's in this category where it's
outnumber a little less. So I think Stone Fury is the better match here because any red deck that can play Stone Fury will want it. Whereas there's to be some decks where outnumber is just going
to
be.
I think outnumber is still good. It's 1 mana and it's an instant and it does damage to a creature equal to the number of creatures you control. It's,
yeah.
There's very few limited decks that have less than 12 creatures, and even if you only do 2 with it, it's still pretty good.
It's still pretty good. Yeah. I do like Touch of the Void a lot because it's 3 damage to the face, and sometimes I can just win the game.
Rolling Thunder is sort of the big uncommon. It's red, and X, and then you can do X damage divided as you choose to any number of target creatures and players.
Which is insane.
It's better than most mythics. It's very, very good. and then green bringing up the rear here. Unnatural Aggression, which is the fight card of the set. It's
the worst fight card I've ever seen.
It's 2 and a green. You have your creature fight one of their creatures, and then it exiles, but it doesn't give any pump to power and toughness. It is an instant.
Yeah.
It's not that great, but it is a card that will go in any deck with green.
Yeah, you guys remember, usually the fight cards in sets of past will be like, your creature gets +1/+2, and then fights another creature.
Yeah, Savage Punch, yeah, +2/+2.
Yeah. And then there's the Tajuro Warcaller, which is just this insane 3 green 2/2 ally.
2/1.
2/1, yeah. When it comes into play, it gives all your creatures +2/+2 until end of turn. Or
and it's
any
got
ally.
Rally, so any ally that you play after it gives all your creatures +2/+2 also. Yeah. So that card's very strong and will go in a lot of green decks, because as long as you've got creatures, you want that card. Even if you can only trigger it once.
That's totally fine.
It's totally fine. Yeah. So those are the type of cards that are crossover cards. Those cards are not archetype specific. And in general, you would want to start the draft with a card like that if you can, depending. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through this a little bit.
Yeah.
But those are the cards. There are others. We didn't go through all of them. And we're not going to be able to talk about every card in this set. And so what you need to do is look at the cards in any given pack, or just, you know, take a look at the whole set and go through each card for yourself and say, okay, is this card a card that wants to be in one of these specific archetypes? Or is this a card that can fit into multiple archetypes? And if it fits into multiples, it's a crossover card.
Yep.
If it doesn't, it's archetype specific. So let's talk about some of the archetype specific cards.
Kalastria Healer. This card is such a pain in my butt. It is a 1/2 for 2 mana, a 1 in the black. Whenever Kalastria Healer or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you lose. Each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. So it's a drain, yep. Drain life. This card is, again, if you're just playing like a black deck that doesn't have anything, any other allies or care about losing or gaining life.
It's horrible.
It's just this card that it comes in for 2 mana, you gain a life, and you have a 1/2 that will die if it blocks pretty much anything. Yeah, and it's not going to trade very well either.
But if you have the black-white life gain deck and you get 3 or 4 of these out, it's insanity.
Yeah,
because if you have even 2 on the battlefield and you play like 2 allies, like you can never lose that game. It's insane.
Yeah, and your opponent just can't stop the damage coming in either. It's not like you're swinging and attacking and they can block. They're forced to waste good removal on these really crappy creatures.
Yep. Mist Intruder is very similar, actually, when you think about it. It's 1 in a blue for a 1/2 flyer, but it has Devoid and Ingest. So Ingest, again, when it deals combat damage to a player, you exile the top card of that player's library. And so now they've got a card sitting there in exile that you can use one of the processors, which you talked about earlier. And a processor is any card that says when you play it, you either have to or you can take one of their cards, your opponent's cards from exile, and put it in their graveyard. And then you get some additional effect, or some cards you have to do that just to get any effect at all. The Mist Intruder is very much like the Kalastria Healer in that it's a sort of crappy creature. It's a 1/2 flyer for 2 that actually enables the entire strategy.
Yeah, and it's important because there aren't that many turn 2 plays in this format. So being able to pop this out if you're on the play on turn 2 means you're probably almost always going to get a hit in with it. And ingesting one card is sometimes all you need to make the rest of your deck.
It turns on every other card. 25%
deck, better, yeah. Instead of waiting there and being like, gosh, I really hope I can ingest something. Oh, how am I going to do it? Mist Intruder is one of those ways that it may not seem significant, but it really does a ton of damage. Same with a card like Benthic Infiltrator, which is essentially... Now, this card is actually pretty crossover,
better,
too,
yeah.
Honestly.
I think this is more of a crossover card because it's a 1/4 for 3. It's 2 in a blue for a 1/4. It has Ingest and Devoid, but it's unblockable.
Yeah, that's
so
the big
one. So it's guaranteed to attack. And it also can block because it's a 1/4 for 3.
Yeah.
So it's a decent blocker against the more aggro strategy decks. I think that even decks that don't have a lot of processing will take the Benthic Infiltrator. But if you don't have processing, you don't want Mist Intruder at all.
Which, again,
is the 1/2 flyer for 2.
Yep.
Brilliant Spectrum. This, nobody's talking about this card a lot, but the Converge deck is a deck that wants this card. It's 3 in a blue for a sorcery. It says it has Converge, so you draw as many cards as you spent colors of mana to cast it. So if you spend blue, green, red, and white, you draw 4 cards, and then you discard 2 cards. So you discard the 2 cards no matter what. So if you can only spend 2 colors of mana to cast it, let's say you're blue and red, and you spend blue, blue, red, red for the 4 mana, draw 2 cards, and you immediately have to discard 2 cards. It's the worst card ever, because you actually cast a card, drew 2 cards, and discarded 2 cards, so you actually are down a card.
Yep.
If you can draw 3, it's like, okay, because it's at least card selection, but it's 4 mana card selection. So let's say you have 3 mana.
It'll feel like it'll waste your entire turn doing it.
Yeah, let's say you have 3 color mana, and you go blue, blue, red, and green, so you draw 3 cards, and now discard 2 cards. But what happened is you also cast the Brilliant Spectrum, so you're even on cards, and you got a little bit of card selection.
Yeah.
But if you can cast it for 4 mana, now you're drawing 4 cards and discarding 2.
Well, 4 different colors of mana.
Sorry, 4 different colors of mana. Now you're drawing 4 cards and discarding 2, and it's actually really good because it gives you the ability when you have too much mana in your hand to just turn that into 4 cards.
Yep.
It does a lot of crazy things, but it's only good in the Converge deck. It's a very bad card.
Yeah, I'll see this last pick in the pack almost.
Yeah, all the time.
At least once a draft.
But it's very much like the Mist Intruder and the Kalastria Healer in that only that one archetype really wants it. But when that archetype, when you have it, that card's actually good.
Yeah, totally.
Voracious Knoll, green black.
Not a big fan of this card.
This card's actually very powerful in the green black deck. You can do these crazy things where you blister pod turn one, turn your Voracious Knoll into a 6/6 on turn three or four, because you can actually, you know, sometimes use the Eldrazi spawn.
Yeah, probably not turn three, turn four for sure, unless you can cheat it out.
Well, if you go blister pod, Voracious Knoll, blister pod, you can do it, I think. Well, maybe turn four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can go off with this card. Yeah. It's two in the black for one in the black. It's a 2/2. You can sacrifice another creature to put two plus one counters on Voracious Knoll, but you can only do it when you could activate it as sorcery.
Right.
Or cast sorcery.
You can't do it at instant speed and sort of get them, but it's not an amazing card, but in the black green archetype, it's very, very powerful because an early 4/4 or 6/6 is super hard to deal with in this format.
Yeah. The fact that it gets plus two counters every time, it's not just temporary, like the Antuzco Husk. Pretty powerful.
Titan's Presence is three colorless, and then you reveal a colorless creature card from your hand, and it exiles any creature with power less than the creature you revealed.
Yeah, and that's an instant, too. So it's one of the best removal spells, but it's only good if you can have multiple colorless creatures, like the majority of your creatures are colorless, and their power is somewhat high.
But in this format, you could have a red blue Devoid deck that literally has 14 colorless creatures in it, in which case Titan's Presence is amazing.
Yep.
But if you're in the black white life gain deck and you have zero colorless creatures, this card does nothing and you don't want it.
Yep, pretty much.
So it's another one of those cards. So and this one is one people don't think about, but Fortified Rampart for me is in the same category
as white blue flyers.
Yes.
Yeah,
so white blue flyers just wants to clog up the ground so they can attack with their flyers. And so their Colostria Healer, if you will, is a 0/6 wall, because they don't care about attacking on the ground. They want to make sure you can't attack them back when they hit you with their flyer. And a couple of Fortified Ramparts just stop everything on the ground until like turn seven. And by then you're dead because they just hit you a bunch of times with a 3/2 flyer.
Yep, and the way that happens even better is they have Tightening Coils, which is one in the blue. A target creature gets -6/-0 and loses flying.
Yep.
So it's actually a really good blue removal spell in the way that blue gets removal, because you're just trying to fly over their head. You don't care about these silly Devoid ingest synergies. You're just throwing birds at their face.
It's crazy how good Tightening Coils is. Most people thought it was not that great, and it's turned out to be extremely good. It stops cards like Felidar Sovereign.
Yeah, it stops
their flyers.
It stops a lot of the big Eldrazi that people are powering out, too.
Anybody's got a Landfall deck? Sorry.
Yeah.
It's crazy good, and again, these cards are not good in any deck that wants to attack on the ground, because Fortified Rampart doesn't attack, and Tightening Coils leaves them with their creature still able to block you.
It just doesn't have any
power. Yeah, so... And then all the gold cards actually fit into the archetype specific cards category. So there, like I said, you can look at each gold card and it will tell you what each archetype wants to do. So that by definition is an archetype card. It's not a crossover card. So this is not a black and white thing, though. So the way we've been talking about it, it seems like every card is either a crossover card or it's an archetype card. The problem is it's more complex than even that.
Yeah.
Some of the cards fit into two archetypes, but not all four. Some fit into three. Some fit into only one. You know, something like Vile Aggregate, which is a Star 5.
Star 5, baby.
For two and a red. It's got Devoid, and it has power.
Trample and ingest.
Yep. And its power is equal to the amount of colorless creatures you control. So it's a 1/5 because it counts itself.
Yeah, this card's absurd.
This card is very, very good. If you have two Eldrazi Scions and like one other random Devoid creature, it's suddenly a 4/5 with Trample and Ingest. That's a very good card. It fits in the red-black aggro strategy because there's a lot of Devoid there. The blue-red... Devoid strategy, but it doesn't really fit in the red green landfall deck, and it doesn't really fit in the red white allies deck.
It fits in the very specific red green deck, which is the weird red green colorless Scion deck. Yeah, because those Scions will make the Vile Aggregate bigger, but that's just like that. Now you're going a little off.
You'd have to get a couple Vile Aggregates to make that deck really good.
Yeah, because that's your main card.
Yeah,
and Brood Monitors.
So it's weird. So Vile Aggregate is a half crossover, half archetype card. It's very good, and I would first pick it depending on the pack. But I'm just saying, like, that's how complicated it is. Some of these cards you're going to look at and go, oh, that's like half an archetype card. But it's sort of crossover because it does fit in multiple archetypes. It just doesn't fit in all four archetypes that touch this color. So, complicated. Super complicated.
Yep.
Okay, so, and the last thing I will say is, like, okay, so we're saying, in general, if you can, you should take a crossover card over an archetype card early on, because that's going to leave you open, and once you get to pack or pick 4, 5, 6, now you're seeing, like, oh, I've got some blue cards, I've got some red cards, and now a Nettle Drone came through. A Nettle Drone is 2 and a red for a card with Devoid. It's a 3/1, and you can tap it to deal 1 damage to each opponent. But you, whenever you play a colorless card, you untap it.
Yep.
So that goes in the blue red Devoid deck. And you know you've taken quite a few blue cards. Maybe you took a red card. Maybe you haven't. But now, 6th or 7th pick, you see this. And now you're like, okay, that is now the 6th or 7th pick. It's late enough that everybody had a chance at it. And now, and I know none of them wanted it. And now I can sort of move in on that blue-red Devoid deck. Now, move in, quote-unquote, carefully. I would say, I don't know how many times in this format where I take a good blue card, another good blue card, a good white card, you know, and then all of a sudden this black card comes through and it puts me into an archetype, you know, it puts me into blue black, and I go, okay, I'm gonna go into that, and I take that card, and then the next pick is like, there's nothing for that archetype, so then I just take a step back and I try and take a crossover card again, or else I take some another archetype card that touches blue.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then I'm still not locking in. A lot of times I'm not locking into my archetype until the second pack.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense too, because there, I mean, in every pack you'll have probably 4 to 5 cards that no one wants at all whatsoever. Yep. So that means there's only 10 or 8, 9 or 10, you know, real good picks out of it. So by one rotation of the table, you may just never see the right cards just due to variance and stuff. So it is hard to lock in early unless you've really just been fed by the people around you to give you the very specific cards saying, hey, you should be in this. Hey, you should be in this. I just passed you a Rolling Thunder. That is as clear of a sign as any that you should be taking red cards and not, you know, taking the colors that I have or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I do think there's something else you have to calculate. And again, it gets complex, and that's why this format is hard. Sometimes the archetype card is so powerful that you do take it early.
Like Vile Aggregate?
Vile Aggregate, I believe, is one of those. Drana's Emissary.
Yep.
Which is 1, a white, and a black. It's a 2/2 flyer, but during your upkeep, every turn, your opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life.
Yep, and it happens during the upkeep, which means it triggers all of your stuff at the beginning of your turn, which actually makes a big difference for a lot of the creatures like Blood, Bone, Land, Vampire.
Even if you're not
in
the black-white deck, it's just... That's a huge thing to just do every turn for free on a 2/2 flyer for 3, which is already a good card. Drana's Emissary, Halimar Tidecaller. Oh my gosh, we love this card.
This is my favorite uncommon of the set. It's this 2 in the blue for a 2/3 ally that when it enters the battlefield, you can return the target card with Awaken from your graveyard to your hand, and land creatures you control have flying. So you can build a whole deck that has Clutch of Currents, Sheer Drops, Undo Risings that all make your lands into dudes. And then when you play this creature, it gets one of those back. And now that land creature is a flyer.
Yeah, it's crazy. But again, this card doesn't do anything if you don't have Awaken cards in your deck.
Yep.
It doesn't get anything back, and it doesn't make anything have flying. It only works with Awaken cards. So
I have happily first picked this.
Yeah, and but the power level is so high when you do have Awaken cards that it can be worth it to first pick it. And also, the Awaken cards can go in multiple decks. Clutch of Currents is great in the Flyers deck, but it's also just fine in the Ingest deck.
It's fine in any deck with blue.
Yeah, it's not.
Card's great.
Yeah, the blue-red deck, Clutch of Currents will be fine there too. It's going to be slightly better in certain archetypes and slightly worse, but it's never unplayable.
Yeah.
So that means Halimar Tidecaller is one of those half-archetype, half-crossover cards. It's powerful enough, I would take it early. We can't go through all of the cards, obviously. There's going to be a ton. What we're trying to do is give you some framework for when you look at a pack, how to think about each card in it. Let's finish up by talking about, I don't know, maybe like our favorite archetypes, Jimmy.
Mine is definitely White Blue Awakened Flyers. Halimar Tidecaller is just such an insane card because it regrowths a card, and almost always the Awakened cards that you want to have in this set are all very powerful.
Yep, and they're the crossover cards, right?
Yeah, they're crossover cards too, so you could easily take, you know, taking a Sheer Drop is such a safe pick, or a Clutch of Currents, because it can go in so many different decks, and it's just by itself a powerful card.
Yep.
So Sheer Drop lets you destroy a tapped creature, and then you can awaken it to make a 3/3, right? And then Clutch of Currents is 1 blue at sorcery speed. You can bounce a creature, or for 4 and a blue, you make a 3/3.
Yep.
And then you make a land into a 3/3, and you bounce a creature. Yeah, yep. These are just great cards. And if you just start taking these, and you really get rewarded buy the Mythic Uncommon in this, because the Halimar Tidecaller is like an A in this deck if you have enough creatures to trigger with it.
It's crazy because it can be a 3-for-1. A lot of the cards can be 3-for-1s. I also think flyers are very powerful in this set. So Cloud Manta is just 3 and a blue for a 3/2 flyer.
Yeah.
That card has gone up and up for me. At first, I thought it was okay. Now it's like, hell yeah, Cloud Manta. That's awesome. Like, I'll take 50 of those things.
I still think Courier Griffin's a better creature, though.
Courier Griffin is the 2/3.
It's a 2/3 flyer instead of a 3/2, but you gain two life.
I think in this deck, actually, I'd rather have Cloud Manta. I will take the 2/3 flyer. 2/3 flyer is actually really good in the black-white life gain deck.
Oh, yeah. But that's why I like it, is because it's one of those sweet cards that works.
It's a crossover card more than Cloud Manta.
Any white deck will happily play that card, whereas Cloud Manta may not fit very well into your blue-black ingest deck, you know?
True. Shadow Glider, which is just 2 and a white for a 2/2 flyer, that card is perfectly fine.
Yeah,
that
card's awesome.
You know, I'll run 3 or 4 of them sometimes, because what happens is in the Awakened Flyers deck is that you're taking Tightening Coils and Fortified Ramparts so that you can just clog up everything on the ground. And the other thing that's great is you have Coral Helm Guide.
Yeah.
Coral Helm Guide is 1 and a blue for a 2/1, but you can pay 5 mana and make something unblockable. So what happens is I Tightening Coils a couple of your big guys, and then later in the game I can sneak something past it with Coral Helm Guide, so Tightening Coils doesn't even have that normal downside that your dudes can still block.
Yep.
Yeah, so very, very cool archetype. This is one of my favorites, too. Oh, the other thing I love about this archetype is if you get enough Awakened cards, you can just run 19 lands.
Yeah, that's really crazy, right? Because all of your lands, and there's another big sub-theme in the set, which is lands matter.
Yeah.
Not just the cards that turn your lands into creatures, but because your lands will be becoming creatures, that means they're also vulnerable to dying in combat, or from a combat trick, or from a burn spell or whatever. So that means you definitely should run more lands, because
I mean 18 for sure, but I'll run 19 if I have 5 or 6 Awakened cards.
Yeah.
And the great thing about running 19 lands is that you have less mulligans,
mm-hmm.
so you just have more keeps.
Yeah.
So you just have some automatic wins where the other guy mulligans a couple times and you didn't have to, and you just get that because your deck is actually built to take advantage of having more lands than them, and you just have to mull less.
Yeah, I really like this deck a lot. Because sometimes here's the thing, is like people are trying to get out to 6 mana to drop their 5/5s and their 9/9s or whatever. You Tightening Coils it, and you're like, I swing again for 6 in the air. What are you going to do? That's a 3.5 turn clock.
I mean, I don't know how many people I've killed with Cloud Manta, but it's a lot. And it's just swinging for 3 every turn, and they're just like, well, I don't know. You got 6 turns.
Yeah.
You know?
Good luck. Good luck. Yeah, there aren't that many cards that just get rid of a flyer, honestly.
Yeah. Another deck I really like, and I think it may be the best deck in the format, is the Blue-Red Devoid deck.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think if you get the right cards, this is the best deck.
It's harder to get, I think, because most people do know it's very good. The key cards are like Nettle Drone, like we talked about earlier, which is a 3/1 pinger. Devoid untaps when you play another colorless spell. Vile Aggregate, which we talked about. Ruination Guide, which gives all your colorless creatures +1/+0.
Yeah, and there's also Tide Drifter, but that's more for the blue-black ingest deck.
I like Tide Drifter in both of those archetypes, though, because you do want to block.
Yeah.
A 3/1 is a Nettle Drone. That's not a good blocker. You don't want it to die. So what are you going to do when they attack you with their landfall creatures? It's nice to have the Tide Drifter out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. This deck is very, very strong. It does do some tempo stuff, too. Like, a lot of times I've won with Clutch of Currents twice in a row and just actually attacking with Nettle Drones and stuff. And all of a sudden, like...
Merc Strider.
Yeah, and you get them down to 3 and you've got a Nettle Drone and you're like, all I got to do is... You got 2 turns because I'm going to tap it and then I'm going to play it. I'm going to tap it next turn and play it.
Colorless spell.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's just got a lot of ways of killing people outside of normal combat means.
Yep.
Even Molten Nursery is a good card in this deck. And people thought that card was terrible, but turns out that card is getting better and better as people keep drafting these Devoid decks.
And that's one of the hallmarks of these very good decks, is that the cards that people thought were terrible and actually are terrible outside of the archetype, that means that you get that card super late.
Yeah.
And so if you're getting cards that are like a B in your deck, but you're getting them like 8th and 9th pick, that's why those archetypes are very, very strong, because you're getting really good cards late in the pack when most other people are getting stuff they can't even play.
Reap the benefits, baby.
Yep. The last one is the Life Gain deck for me, anyway.
Yeah, no, I agree with this, too. These are definitely my top 3 decks.
The key card is Serene Steward, which is a 1 and a white for a 2/2 ally. But anytime you gain life...
Sold.
Anytime you gain life, you can pay white and put a 1/1 counter on something.
Yep.
Colostria Healer, which we already talked about. Bloodbond Vampire. Bloodbond Vampire with Colostria Healer out is a 4-mana 4/4 because you play it, it's an ally, it triggers Colostria Healer, and then you've gained life, and now it gets a 1/1 counter. It's very, very strong. Colostrian Nightwatch is another card, which is 4 and a black for a 4/5, but if you gain life, it gains flying.
Yeah, that's why Drawn's Emissary is so good with this, is because it triggers it before, you know, even Stonehaven Medic's a good card in this deck, just to get the life gain going.
The Zulaport Cutthroat is decent, which anytime a creature dies, you gain 1 life and your opponents lose 1 life. A creature you control.
You control,
dies.
Yeah, it's not Blood Artist.
Very, very strong. I love these archetypes, all three of those. I think Converge is sneaky good. It's a little bit harder to get.
It's harder to get, and it wants to beat down because it's got that the Tajiru guy.
I don't actually think that's necessarily true. The Tajiru Stalwart, which is a 3-mana 3/4 if you do it right, which gets outclassed really quickly because you figure like File Aggregate just stops it dead in its tracks.
Yeah, that's true.
Kozilek Sentinel, which is a 1/4/2 that everybody runs, stops it dead in its track. I actually think that the Converge deck. Yeah. Is a slower, grindier card advantage deck, and Brilliant Spectrum is what makes that deck go.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone play that successfully yet, just because I think you need to have a really good combination of cards and fixing cards. So you're playing. It sucks when you have to play cards that just fix your mana because you'd rather play a creature, you know, or something that may kill your opponent, a Cloud Manta or whatever. So it's interesting, but
you need the 2/1 green guys that
Lifespring Druid. Yeah,
those guys are really good in the Converge deck.
You also need like the Blighted Fen, which is this sack land for 3 and green where you can sack and grab 2 basics out of your library.
Although it's tough because that card is really bad in the Converge deck also because it only taps for a colorless. So and then you got to take your whole turn 5 to use it. I like Evolving Wilds. The Lifespring Druids, you probably have to get a Havland or two in there. So
yeah, Fertile Thickets will do work in that deck as well.
But when you get it, that deck can be very, very strong.
Yeah.
It's just not always there.
Yeah, I've lost a lot to the white-black life gain deck. It's really frustrating.
That deck is the most fun to play for sure because you're just always doing stuff. It's like, I play this, it triggers this. I pay a mana, I put a 1/1 counter here. This guy gains flying. Like, every time you're
doing
stuff.
And hey, I'm at 30 life and you are just dying slowly because I'm draining you every time. Yeah, I had the best white red deck I'd ever drafted with Josh Kim over in. We were playing Modo a lot in England in our hotel room when we were bored. We had drafted this sweet white red deck and we were like, sweet, we're going to freaking destroy. First round, wreck the opponent. Second round, white black life gain. Turn 2 Colostria Healer. And we looked at each other and was like, well, I guess we have to race because we're going to be gaining life. And then they popped out a Gideon.
And you're just like,
that was
dead.
All she wrote.
Because Gideon makes allies.
Gideon makes allies, and we just sat there being like, can't kill Gideon this turn. Can never kill Gideon
now
ever
we're
again.
Just dead.
Yeah, it's all over. It doesn't matter
Retreat
what we have.
Retreat to Emyria, we didn't mention, is a super strong card in that deck, because every time you play a land, you either make a 1/1, which is an ally, which gains you life, and it costs them life. Or once you get enough of those, you just make all your creatures +1/+1 and kill them.
Which is insane.
Yeah, Retreat to Emyria is very, very good. I think this format is not good for aggro in general. Red black is okay if that deck comes together. All the rest of the aggro decks I don't like. I don't like Landfall that much. I don't like the red white allies deck that much.
Actually, you know, I like Landfall more because it's got a lot of trample in there and it's got some really interesting combat tricks and Sure Strike, because Sure Strike plus trample is just so much damage. You get damage
in. But here's the list of cards that are anti-aggro. There's Fortified Rampart, so 06 wall. There's 05 Tide Drifter. There's Tightening Coils. There's 1/4 Kozilek Sentinel, which goes in most of the Devoid decks. There's a 1/5 Vile Aggregate. There's Clutch of Currents. Now, Clutch of Currents against an aggro deck, that means every single 1-mana unsummoned spell that gets into a draft is getting played by somebody. And against an aggro deck, you just play it for the 1-mana because you don't care. You just need to last till turn 5, and then the aggro deck can't kill you anymore.
Yeah.
And then all the Scions are chump blockers for all the aggro decks. I'm not saying an aggro deck can never win. I just don't think they're well positioned in general in the format. And we do.
It's tough. The format is definitely a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And
there's not very many 2-drops that are very good. You know, all the good 2-drops that we talked about are all synergy 2-drops. They're not like attack you for a bunch of mana.
Yeah. And I would argue the best 2-drops in are both landfall ones for red and green for that deck.
They're the Gnarlid and Valakut Predator or whatever.
No, that's a 3-drop. That's a 3-drop. The McKindy Slide Runner.
The 2/1.
Yeah. It's like,
and
those,
both of those are easily stopped with like 1 wall, 1 tightening coil, 1 clutch of currents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to go wide and fast at the same time with those decks. And the thing is, like, I've actually lost Fortified Ramparts to a Snapping Gnarlid Gnarly because of Swell of Growth.
Yeah, but that's fine because they used a card. They used all that tempo. You know, how much it cost them, like, their whole third or fourth turn to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with that kind of play because Fortified Ramparts isn't necessarily meant to just stop them forever. It's just meant to slow them enough till you can kill them before they kill you.
Yeah. I've played two games now where the opponent has milled themselves out just because it's so dirtly.
Yeah.
They're just gaining a bunch of life.
Actually, that happens most often, I've found, when you're blue-white flyers and they're blue-white flyers. Because what happens is you can kill all, you can trade all your flyers, and then you've got Fortified Ramparts and Tightening Coils, and all of a sudden, like, yeah, everybody's got three creatures, but they're all either walls or they've got Tightening Coils on them, and so nobody can actually hit each other. And then you're like, Clutch Occurrence. Then they attack with the 3/3, you block with your wall, and then you Clutch Occurrence them, and nothing actually happened. Yeah.
You Clutch Occurrence your own creature.
I've done it.
Back.
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, super fun. Hopefully there's been stuff in here. I'm not saying we're the best drafters in the world. Like, I've done well with this format, you know, but there are a lot of people better at drafting than we are. But I think there's a lot of our listeners that are new to drafting, haven't drafted a lot, might want to try it out.
This set is particularly tough.
Well, the great thing is you sit down, you get three packs. You might pull an Expedition. You might pull a Gideon.
Yeah.
You might pull an Ulamog. You know, you're going to get some games in. Like, those usually drafts are only nominally more expensive than just buying a couple of packs. And you get added value. You get to play some games, maybe win some packs.
Potentially even grab a rare from someone else's pack because they decide to take another card over it, you know?
Yeah, they might take a synergy card and you might get a good rare that you wanted.
Yeah.
And you're learning how to draft. Like, this is something that will pay you back in the future. And just, if you haven't tried it, don't be intimidated. It's not that crazy. You go, you pick a card.
Yeah.
Then you pick the next card. And eventually you're just like, whatever, I'm only picking red or blue cards.
Yeah. I would advise the one easy way to get prepared is just, you know, listen to a brief podcast, read any number of the primers online. Just take 10 seconds to skim through it and just have a general idea of what you're walking into. Otherwise, you're going to be so, I don't know, just overwhelmed.
Or just get your friends. You know, that's probably the very best way.
Yeah, if you can find
your group of friends, six is great.
Yeah.
I think six is perfectly fine. Like, coverage drafts and things with, like, pro teams, they'll do six.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to draft. Just get five of your buddies, split the cost of a booster box, draft.
If you don't have that many friends that do it, they're all, you know, school clubs.
Yeah. You can even do it with four. I mean, just to learn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for the variety of cards you're going to see is going to be make it a little bit, the decks won't be as good, but that doesn't matter. If you're just learning how to draft, four people is great.
Yeah, I did something really silly. When I cracked my box of Balfour Zendikar, I walked around and made it draft table.
Yeah.
And I just fake drafted for
eight different
people. I sat every seat and
I've
was
done
like,
that
well,
for sure.
Take. Yeah, just because I'm like, I'm going to crack these packs anyway.
I did that for this set. I did it for cons. You learn a lot about like what decks are going to look like. You know, if somebody gets this specific card, what direction they might go in.
It's nice too, because some seats can be like, I'm just going to be the stubborn person in this particular scene. Like, I'm going to try and force this because I had a sweet mythic I opened in the first pack, and be like, wow, that did not pan out, or like, wow, that kind of panned out, but it still wasn't good. Or, you know, you get to learn little valuable lessons there. That is a little time consuming, and you look like a madman when you do it. But
you look like a madman. We'll just do it when no one's watching.
Yeah. Thus is the story of my magic life, hiding when I open packs, like, no one look. It's a hunger.
All right, we hope you enjoyed the first episode of the Sideboard.
See the board.
Sideboard. Just a reminder, our episode next week, our regular episode of the Command Zone, will be on Thursday, not Tuesday.
Yep, October 29th. No, November 5th. Today is October 29th.
Correct. November 5th. Because we are doing an interview with Wizards of the Coast member Adam Prozac, who is in R&D as a game designer, and he has had a big hand in designing the new Legendary Cube on MTGO.
Very
also
exciting.
The most exciting part.
We have a Commander spoiler.
We do.
Spoiler!
Spoiler alert! Wow, we didn't even practice that.
Nope. That'll never happen like that again. Yeah, so that's going to be really exciting. We're going to try and pair all those things up so you guys get an interview talking about this new Legendary Cube on MTGO that also has the new Commander cards in it, as well as a preview of what's going to come in the Commander set, which is coming out later in November, which is really exciting. It's right around the corner.
Yeah, November 13th, I believe.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I always look forward to these sets every single year.
Yeah, November 13th. Hey, that's the day that Prof's coming to visit us.
Hey, that's right. Oh, we have some good stuff.
I'm
going
to pick him up
too
at the airport, and then we're going to go to the card store and buy all the Commander product for sure. That's
nice.
What we're going
to
do.
Actually, no, I might be free that night, so maybe we could go to an F&M somewhere.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah, I bet people in town would love that.
Oh, yeah. Prof, get ready to get swamped, buddy.
Get swamped.
Get swamped, bro.
All right, time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic. So a few months ago, I recommended a podcast called The Serial Podcast, which turns out is the biggest podcast in the history of the world, and everybody already knew about it. But
yeah, maybe more than a few months ago now that I think about it.
It's probably like a year ago. I think it was around winter of 2014.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, there's so much hype around it back then.
Anyway, so The Serial Podcast, if you don't know what it is, you should definitely go check it out. It was done by a woman named Sarah Koenig, who worked for NPR and This American Life, and she got onto this cold case about a murder like 15 years ago and really went into it and interviewed all the people, and there's all this weird stuff, and people just got enraptured by this story about this guy named Adnan Syed. So what's happened in the meantime is that podcast ended and Adnan's still in jail. But two other podcasts have started up. One is by somebody, a lawyer who actually knows Adnan, and then some law professors. They got interested in the case and started looking into it, and they've actually drummed up new evidence. And then there's a fan-made podcast. So the lawyer podcast is called Undisclosed, and the fan-made podcast used to be called The Serial Dynasty, but now it's called Truth and Justice. They're both on like the top 20 podcasts on iTunes.
Right.
Easy to find. And they have actually found out like a whole bunch of new information. They've interviewed new people. They've found all these new little law wrinkles because they're lawyers.
Wow, that's sweet.
There's a ton of interesting stuff that's happening, and it's happening right now. In fact, there's a lot. There's been some motions for like different. I'm not a lawyer. Gabe would probably know what all this stuff is. Sorry, SG Doc. But anyway, there's a lot of movement in that case, and some things, some interesting things may be happening soon. So if you listen to The Serial Podcast, if you liked it, or if you haven't, go listen to The Serial Podcast and then check out Undisclosed, and Truth and Justice. Those are the two podcasts that super interesting. Suck me right back in, man. I hadn't thought about Serial in like 9 months, and somebody told me about this, and I was just I listened to them all in like a week.
That's hilarious. I still haven't listened to Serial yet.
Oh,
I've seen every online parody of it, though. So I feel like I'm in the loop. I did get to watch The Jinx, though, and that.
The Jinx was good. We talked about that on an end step once, too.
I love that sort of stuff where it's like there is a mystery and we're going to solve it together, guys.
Yep. Serial basically started everybody wanting to do that. Jinx, they had started that before, but they came out after.
It's funny. Things come in waves like that anyway, and Jinx was right in line with all that other stuff. Yeah, sweet. Good all podcast. Right. Always good to expand out and check out
new
podcasts.
I mean, we know everybody listening likes podcasts.
Yeah, they better.
All right. Don't forget, speaking of podcasts, to listen to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex and Ben talk about modern as a format and all things competitive magic. You can follow them on Twitter at the MMcast, or you can find them on rocketjump.com/the MMcast.
Hey, maybe we'll have a modern sideboard episode.
Oh, we definitely could, and we could have them on as guests, or we could just not.
Yeah.
And just be like, we talked about modern. What's up, guys?
Yeah, and they listen to it, and they're like, guys,
Alex will listen to anything we do and say that.
Yeah, Grand Prix LA is coming up, though, and it's going to be modern format in May. If you guys will be around, I think Josh and I will definitely try to attend that, and I will play a red deck wins deck.
Probably me, too, because I can't imagine putting together. Maybe Affinity or something?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll play Tron because I've seen it played a lot.
I don't know how to play any of those decks. I'm playing red deck wins.
Yeah, red deck wins.
You know what I'm going to play? Commander.
Yeah.
I'm just going to show up and play Commander.
You bring a Commander deck to... by the way, longest deck cleanup step now ever. Josh, the other Josh, built a Tron deck.
Uh-huh.
And Tron is basically play Karn Liberate and the new Nulamog and Ugin.
And all the Urza lands, right?
Yeah, and all the Urza lands to make a poop ton of mana.
nice recovery.
And I played my Marchesa commander deck against it and be like, all right, who's going to win? I got destroyed. Yeah. Well, he got turn 3 Karn, and I was like, oh, that's why.
It's way too fast.
Yeah, it's way too fast.
He can have 4 of every card.
Yeah, it's built to be consistent. But I did hang in there. I hung with him for quite a while.
That's actually kind of awesome, Commander versus another format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could do a whole little thing on that. Anyway, the editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Cards animations. You can find him at Living Cards MTG. You can also find the Living Cards animations on the episodes that have video that Terry edits on our YouTube page, youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. You can watch all of our videos there.
Correct. All right, everybody. Let us know how you liked the first episode of The Sideboard, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Out.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.